You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
I feel good that 10,080 minutes have passed, and that means it is Simple Flight Radio. I'm Al Waterloo, broadcasting on the KPWK Airport, but from the KOSH Airport.
What does that all mean?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. If you don't know what that is, you can pull out your 4Flight app or look this up on your JEP chart, but...
Everyone knows KOSH. Come on now.
Let's be honest. Let's get real with the situation, you know what I mean? But good evening, everybody. It is 8 o'clock in the p.m., and it is Sunday night. Those two add up to be Simple Flight Aviation Radio time. And I'm Al Waterloo. Along with me is Mr.
Mark Eppner.
How you doing tonight, Mark?
I'm giddy. I'm at
Whoa! Like a little girl? I don't know.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that every time I get near Oshkosh, whether it's Air Venture time or not, I get goosebumps. And maybe coming off Halloween with the supernatural stuff, it happens here. Even though the crowd isn't here, I still feel the energy. And like I say, every time it gives me the exact same feeling.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Last time I drove up to Oshkosh was this summer. Well, of course, naturally for the main Mecca
aviation.
Wait a
minute, you drove up?
I did,
I
did. It's horrible, I know. Don't remind me of it, but I was bawling like a 5-year-old girl on the way up in the drive, just listening to liveatc.net on my app on my phone. And just hearing it, you could listen to the Oshkosh arrival feed, and it was pretty awesome.
Oh, I love
and
that.
Guys are just saying, "Oh, welcome to the show, nice rock."
But why were you here? I mean, and not only why were you here, what was significant about Air Venture and the connection to Simple Flight Radio?
Well, you know what? If you would have asked me a couple months ago that Simple Flight Radio would be back at its very first location for its very first radio show, I would never believe you. But tonight we're broadcasting live from the Hilton Garden Inn right at the Oshkosh Airport.
Yeah, and what a great place it is. And I'm used to seeing it just packed with all of us drunk people during Air Venture.
Drunk on flying, that is.
Drunk on
aviation.
Flying, absolutely. But, it's a great place, newly renovated rooms. It looks so nice here. And we had a pleasant surprise because we all thought we were going to park over at one of the great FBOs here and have to take a ride. And no, they've got their own private parking.
Absolutely.
How cool is that?
It is pretty cool. Can you believe it? Well, this is our Simple Flight Aviation Radio's like first mobile, well, I guess second, but let's call it the first official live on location show. Yeah. And we flew up from Chicago.
Yeah, we grabbed the Dakota from the club we're all in, and thank God a Dakota can carry full fuel and lots of people and lots of radio gear and a full tank and great in. But I was a little disappointed in one thing.
What's that?
Well, I, of course, had this flying leg coming up, and I thought I did a great job. But, of course, every flight is evaluated by the landing. And it wasn't. The plane can be used again, so by definition it's a great landing.
Yeah.
But I understand you recorded it.
I did.
Posted it to Spark Reel.
I caught it. We documented it, and, pardon your language at the end of the video, but yes, that Mark's epic landing is posted on sparkreel.com in the flying group, and it was pretty awesome. You could see how passionate this guy gets with his landings.
Well, it's a source of pride. Even when I was taking my flying lessons back in 1976 at the Iowa City Airport, I would, every lunch hour, I would go up and just do touch and goes, because everything was about greasing landing. Forget if I could do anything else.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? When we filed the flight plan today, you know, we normally we would put two souls on board, but today we had three.
And we're very, very pleased to welcome a former guest
and Mr. Flight Blog himself, Todd McClamrock. How you doing?
Oh, wow. Didn't expect a round of applause, but
We didn't either.
No, well, and I believe there was a second aircraft with my roadies that came along afterwards. Very much a pleasure to be with you guys. I'm very passionate about the topic you're talking about tonight with flying clubs, and so it's great to be up here. And yeah. I think you guys should start every show with a fly-out experience.
We should. That would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Deployment. You know, we could start our own road show and hopefully maybe get, just like Mr. McClamrock, our own groupies.
Yeah. Well, actually, with this kind of thing, I already told my wife I wasn't going to be back till about 1 in the morning on going into a Monday, so we should take advantage of these newly renovated rooms at the Hilton Garden Inn here at Whitman Field. But maybe not tonight.
We have to get back for something in the morning. Yeah, but you know, it's great to be up here. It's great. It's great to finally have a kind of a homecoming. But you know what? I did not look at the weather before I came. I didn't know how cold it would be up here.
I didn't know what the weather was either. Well, we did get a briefing, a proper briefing. We did. And with all the TFRs, I cannot wait till the election is over, because all over the Midwest, it's changing by the minute.
Seriously.
But let's let our listeners in on exactly what's going on with Oshkosh weather. Why don't you help us out there?
You could tell us if a hoodie is only substantial weather for what's going on right now. But let's dial up Whitman Field's automated weather observation system and see what actually is going on. Let's see. All right.
Yes. Altimeter 3022.
That's high pressure.
Yeah. That would cause a delay in Philly.
Regional Airport. Automated weather observation 0207 Zulu. Wind calm. Visibility 10. Sky condition clear. Temperature 01 Celsius.
Woo!
Point minus 03 Celsius.
That's pretty nippy.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I'm laughing because wind calm. I was going to say, well, there was a strong crosswind. I guess I would get caught on that.
No excuse there.
Yeah, no excuse there. And if you don't want to see any excuse and see the make-believe crosswind that Mr. Mark Eppner faced, you can go to sparkwheel.com and see
but
that
if I had been an SR-22, that would have been a greaser.
Yeah. Blame it on something else.
Yeah, I learned to do that very well.
Right, absolutely. Well, hopefully, I don't know if you can, you know, that video might make some people chuckle a little bit, but it doesn't make me laugh anymore. I feel bad that it might be hurting your feelings now, but can you let's get off that topic and make us laugh, Mark.
Well, I don't know if I'm gonna make you laugh, but I have to tell you, doing this week in and week out and always coming up with a Sunday night chuckle, and I've only struck out really once, but the good news is reality always kind of gives me something to rely on. And let me ask you, when you get to go to an airport, you're pretty excited, aren't you?
Oh, big time.
Yeah, well, so I'm reminded.
I'm not doing that kind of stuff.
Can you hold the side effect until I'm done, the sound effect? So, you know, I'm reminded of a story where someone wasn't so excited. A mother woke up, and she came out of the bedroom and noticed her son's door was closed. And she thought that he would have left the house already, and she went in, and her son, Johnny, was still in bed. And she said, Johnny, you have to get up today. You've got an airplane trip. And he was saying, I don't want to go. And she said, why? He says, well, I've got two reasons. And she said, tell me what? And he says, well, I don't like wearing a suit. And whenever I'm on the airplane, the people there don't like me.
What?
And so she said, well, you have to go. And he said, why? She says, well, I have two reasons. And he said, what? He says, well, one, you're 45 years old, and two, you're the captain.
Yeah, that's awesome. We got a good chuckle now. Yeah, we got it going. So, I mean, if you're the captain, you better show up.
Exactly.
No case of the Mondays for that guy.
Absolutely not. No, that's. I can't imagine anyone not wanting to go flying or get in an airplane. But actually, so Johnny recovered and went. You'll be happy to know that.
Yeah. And well, speaking of flying airplanes, today November 4th is a pretty big day for airplane history, aviation history nonetheless. Do you know of anything that's significant that had happened?
I do, but I think I want you to go first. Because I always like to be save the best for last.
The best for last.
That would be correct.
Well, okay, I'll start.
Yeah,
well,
please.
And today is November 4th, and actually the one of the coolest things happened November 4th, 2012, today, just hours ago.
Oh, it was just hours
ago? Yeah, absolutely.
I thought we usually evaluate us by how far back we can go, so I think I'm going to win this one.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the higher number wins in this case, maybe. Or
the lower number.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So anyway, today was the first revenue flight of the domestic revenue flight of the Boeing 787.
Oh, where did it fly from? I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you
well, it flew from. It was United Airlines.
Okay.
Okay. So where would you think if you were United Airlines, where would you have your very first 787 take off and land at?
I would think O'Hare would be top of the list.
That's on one of them,
and not Denver, maybe. I can think of there.
So well, Denver would be a good. I would say that's a pretty legit guess, but Mr. McClamrock, what would your guess be?
I'm going to go with Houston.
Houston, all right, you got it. That's
oh
awesome.
My God!
Why does that make sense?
You know, it's just first thing that came to my mind, and I am a former United employee, so no, I read about it today. I actually was hoping the winds were going to be coming the right way, so I could see a fly by the house this morning. But
that would have been
didn't work
neat.
Out.
You know what? I cannot wait to go airplane spotting at O'Hare and watch that thing land. Just the wingspan alone, and, you know, just seeing that how the wings curve up, and you're just, you know, imagine that thing landing right over your house, and these wings are just like stretched way high.
Actually, I will say the one thing that I do like about the TFRs is when they shut down the airspace in Chicago, and then all of a sudden you look just off of, we're at Papa Whiskey Kilo, as
yeah.
Dan said, and to see Air Force One just take off, own the sky against a cobalt blue sky, it is so cool, and they come right close to our airport. We're only about, 7 miles away from O'Hare as it is.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's absolutely pretty. That's a cool shade of blue, that's for sure.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. But, so, okay, so can you top that?
Well, I'm going to just go back 102 years. Not much, right? So in 1910, the British non-rigid airship City of Cardiff, which was built by E.T. Willows, completed the first ever dirigible flight from England to France.
Whoa.
I bet you didn't know that.
I don't even know how to spell dirigible.
Yeah, I don't know that I know how to pronounce it. Yeah. Our guest today probably would know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I think I got it.
Yeah. Well, do we have a... Can the word dirigible be printed on a pilot certificate? I don't even know. I'm at that. This is a legitimate question.
Hey, you're the CFI.
Yeah. Well, as we all know that, and from a couple episodes ago, a good pilot is always.
Yeah,
ready.
Absolutely. So I'm going to put that down as a. I'm going to put that down as a follow up for next week.
Okay.
On dirigible. That's a to do for me.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we do have a very special show in store for us tonight. We have,
and how appropriate we'd be in Oshkosh for it.
Absolutely. We wouldn't be in Oshkosh unless it was big.
Exactly right. Something aviation, something big.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we have Mr. MyFlightBlog.com himself here, Todd, with us. But tonight we would like to introduce Mr. Adam Smith from the AOPA, and you're the Senior Vice President of the new division.
The Center to Advance the Pilot Community.
Yeah. Welcome.
Good evening, Adam.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Well, we got a little of the audience going ahead and cheering in the background.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very good. Oh, this is pretty exciting.
Yeah, so Adam, actually, I've had the opportunity to learn a lot about you, and all three of us, we enjoyed dinner with you to learn even more, but our listening public probably doesn't know much, so maybe you could start us off by giving a little bit of your background and how you ended up in this wonderful role we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, a quick background if people have never heard me speak before, they've figured out already I'm not American.
They're hearing that Cleveland accent.
I was born in Northern England, and first 25 years of my life, I don't think I even gave a moment's thought to aviation, to be truthful. My passion and the the early years of my life was history. I grew up in a country that is just full of wonderful history, and I did a degree in history and learned how to run museums. So I did a coal mining museum and a golf museum and a Victorian farming museum. And then
in
my mid-20s, I found myself running the National Museum of Aviation in Scotland. And that was the point at which what had been my driving passion in life sort of coincided and collided with what has become my the all-devouring passion in my life, which is aviation. So I came at it through the museum aspect, and as soon as I got into aviation, actually, or into the aviation museum, it was very striking to me that there was something different going on here. That when you're trying to take school kids around a farming museum and to keep them interested, it is really hard. But you take them around an airplane museum, and it was like, wow, this is amazing. I've got their attention. And you know, I just felt, as soon as I came into contact with aviation, I'm suddenly surrounded by these really passionate people, and there's just something very compelling about it for me. There's sort of a spirit that seems to flow through the aviation experience and the aviation community that I really felt drawn to. So it wasn't long after starting work at the museum that I'd started to learn to fly, and that whole journey led me here to America. I did the first 35 hours of my flight training in Scotland, but then there was an accident with the airplane I was learning in, and so I actually came over, finished my license in Florida, and at the same time I spoke at a museum conference in Washington DC. It was a sort of a gathering of aviation museums, and that being there led me to a job here in Oshkosh working for EAA. So I came over in the year 2000 to run the EAA museum, and you know, obviously a huge move, leaving your family and your friends and your football team and things like that.
Now football, yes, is your football.
Yes, where I come from, the game of football is played with a ball, not an egg.
So does that? We got to ask: are you a Packers fan then?
Well,
even though that's the wrong kind of football that we just mentioned.
Yeah. You know, I think it is hard to come here and not become assimilated as part of the Packer Nation.
Yeah.
I had really no knowledge of the game of football until I came to live here in Wisconsin, and there are so many passionate people all around you. It actually does remind me of football back home, or soccer as you would call it, where the whole community really gets passionately behind something. And I think in my observation, it is unique in the American sports in that way. And so actually the experience of being here when Green Bay went and won the Super Bowl was a lot of fun, I must admit. I think that was the drunkest I've ever been in my life. there were parts of that night that I literally blanked out of my mind, but they are on YouTube, so
that's great. Well,
one I want to follow up on.
Right. Mark, don't you have a shirt that says something about Oshkosh and being a
quiet little drinking town with a flying problem?
Yeah, except a caveat being except when the Packers win the Super Bowl.
That's right. They're going to have to add that.
So I did 11 years here with EAA, and never stopped running the museum, which if your listeners have never been, they've got to come and visit the EAA museum.
It's a great museum. Yeah. I've been there multiple times.
It's one of the best in the world. But I also got involved in various other things at EAA, the youth programs, Young Eagles, and the chapter program, and the publications, and things like that. And really got to know aviation here in America. And of course, you know, for 1 week per year, you're in the most amazing place in the whole world for aviation. And I really developed a huge passion for the aviation experience in America. And part of that was informed by having flown in Europe. If flying in Europe is really, really tough,
right?
I would say, just as a rule of thumb, it's four times as expensive as it is over here.
Wow!
Right now in Scotland, where I used to fly, Avgas is probably $14 a gallon.
Oh my goodness!
Holy smokes!
Yeah,
LSA, something that's burned less than 5 gallons. Glider, yes.
And there's all kinds of sort of subtle things like landing fees everywhere you go, navigation fees just to fly in the airspace, and it's subtle things that maybe you don't think of. Like, there's just a basic lack of infrastructure. So there's a lack of licensed mechanics. And I don't think anyone in America has experienced this at all in aviation. But I was talking to my friend recently, and he's got a Mooney, and his exhaust manifold cracked. And he was grounded for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Because in a country of 60 million people, there's only two people in the whole country are licensed to do the weld to repair his exhaust manifold, and he just had to wait. And so when your infrastructure collapses, you know, aviation gets really, really tough. And it's one of the reasons that I'm really passionate about this job that I now have with AOPA that I've been doing for the last couple of months, because as I think many of your listeners will know, the pilot population in the USA and some other measures that we can measure aviation activity by, like how many hours are flown and how many operations there are at airports and things like that. Aviation's been in a slow decline for about 30 years here in America. And I think it's reached a point where we really need to do something serious about that. And that's why AOPA has set up this new division, the Center to Advance the Pilot Community. It is a place that the organization is going to assemble all of its efforts to try and do something to stop and turn that around. And one of the reasons I'm personally very motivated in the job is because I know what it's like when the infrastructure's collapsed. Now, the good news is that I don't think we're anywhere near that here in the USA yet. For me, this country is still paradise on earth. If you go to anywhere else on the planet, and there is nothing like the freedom and the infrastructure and the community and all the wonderful things that we have right now. But I think I'm here to say, let's not take that for granted. Let's try and build on the positives that we have and stop that decline and get it turned around.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to confess and have told you this already, that I actually applied for this job that you took, and I want to know who could do a better job than me. And I see your resume and listen to this and know that you are kind of the right guy for the job. But I'd like to start off really and say that I've been a member with AOPA and loved it for many years. Actually, I have a 6-digit membership number.
Oh, wow.
That's a
don't
little
date yourself
yeah,
like
really.
That.
And we've seen a lot of great things come from AOPA, but so many times they put something out there and then hope the community runs with it. And I'm going to put you on the spot right away. And what's different this time? What are you going to be able to do after all the other times that we maybe have seen, not necessarily a lack of follow-through, but the accountability pushed maybe back to the community without AOPA standing behind it itself?
I think that's a fair question, Mark. I feel I should apologize for
no, no apology.
I hope I'm the right person for the job, but I also know there are many, many other people that I meet every single day that are passionate about aviation and skilled in aviation. And you know, I've got my strengths and I've got my weaknesses too. What I can absolutely commit to is that I will give my all to this role and do the very best that I can, because there's a sort of motivation to do that comes from very deep inside me. And so I'll do my best, but I think there is no way that AOPA can do this on its own as an organization, or
right,
that I can do this on
right,
my own
yeah, absolutely.
In the job that I have. I think fundamental to getting things turned around is to try and build a spirit of collaboration and cooperation amongst the aviation groups. And when I say groups, not just the big associations, but there's a whole community of flying clubs, EAA chapters, type clubs, you know the community that's out there. And it also gets down to the individual people. I feel my observation is that there are several thousand people here in the USA who are sort of evangelically positive and motivated with really good thoughts and actions about aviation. These are the people that get into leadership positions in flying clubs or chapters, or they start youth programs and they go into schools, and there's a lot of really, really good people around. And if we can do anything, I think it's maybe to sort of mobilize that army mm-hmm. of people and get them acting positively about aviation. So to directly address the question I think you're asking me, I think you were making the observation that I've heard from others that, you know, AOPA maybe has got a little bit of a track record of announcing a program and it's the big deal for a year or so, and then they sort of move on to something else, and you wonder whatever happened to the big idea of last year. And I don't think that's the case with the Centre to Advance the Pilot Community. I think fundamentally how it's been set up and structured in the organisation and how the budget has been put together and the staff is different to some of the things that have gone on over the last 5 or 10 years. This is not a marketing campaign. It is a true initiative. Maybe the best analogy I can give you is, I'm sure you and many of your listeners will be familiar with the Air Safety Foundation, or it's now called the Air Safety Institute at AOPA. The Centre to Advance the Pilot Community has been sort of set up and structured in a very similar way, so that it has its own staff, it has its own budget, it has its own voice, and I think you will see it trying to do in the area of advancing the pilot population similar things to what has been done in the area of safety. But to be truthful, if people are skeptical about what I'm saying, I would understand that. We've been up and running for a couple of months, and I hope that over the next year or two, as people start to see how we're acting and the things that we're doing, they'll start to get some confidence that this thing's doing good work and is here to stay.
Right. I think what I kind of hear from you is that, hey, this isn't just a one person deal. You know, it's mobilizing the army. You know, we're all part of the good fight here. You know, we're all aviation enthusiasts, and it's so important for each one of us to kind of take ownership of whatever it is that we love of aviation and try to make it better. And you know, I think that that's a pretty exciting, you know, journey to come up where we can actually, you know, work on this and take our passion and take it to the next level.
Absolutely. And I think what we're hoping that AOPA can bring to that is, okay, it is the biggest association. It's got the biggest megaphone. If we want to broadcast a message, it's got the most power in Washington if we need to change things at a regulatory level. So hopefully, people will feel that AOPA is there sort of as a strong partner in this, but also not trying to take ownership and leadership of everything. There is plenty of room in what needs to be done for lots of, I think there's entrepreneurs doing great things, there's
Absolutely. People
at a community level doing great things, and I want to help and support and encourage that as much as possible.
Well said.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the neat part about this is it's kind of like it almost feels like a blank drawing space. Mm-hmm. I've kind of felt that, the way I've kind of explained aviation and the mood lately to people is that, hey, it's kind of like the real estate market. It's depressed. But if you really deep down, understand that and kind of can see through the muck, there's a ton of opportunity to really, you know, make it how we want it to be.
Yeah, no, there's a definite need for a paradigm shift, but the timing is right, the people are right, the enthusiasm right, and I'm in your answer, Adam, I hear a lot about investment, not just a program that's thrown out, but infrastructure, an actual center with a P&L and all. I think that's absolutely the right way to get started.
Well, and you know, it's a difficult challenge because, as you mentioned, it's such a blank space. There's so many different things that could affect positive change here. How is it that you guys, you know, I've read that flying clubs is one of the first initiatives you really want to dive into. Tell us a little bit about how that came about. How did you recognize that flying clubs are doing something unique that is positive for the industry?
I think having a blank sheet of paper can be a really great thing. It's like, wow, you got a blank sheet of paper and they're giving us money and resources and we can do whatever we want. So that's the fun side of it. But there's also a challenge there as well, which is that you cannot do everything. I feel actually right now surrounded by a blizzard of ideas, and because if you just throw out there to the aviation community, what can we do to reverse the decline? You'll get a lot of ideas back. And by the way, I have not heard a bad idea that's just
right.
flat out bad. You know, they're all to some extent valid and good. And our challenge, I think, is to sort of, you know, keep everyone jolly and positive about things. And by the way, Al, I couldn't agree more with what you just said about the need to be sort of positive and optimistic. I think aviation's somehow got itself into like almost a mental state of depression right
yeah.
now. And one of the things that I really want the center to try and encourage is, hey, you know, no turnaround in history ever got built on negatives. And maybe the one of the worst things that I see is that we've almost got to this point where, you know, you're sort of not a true pilot unless you are grumpy about aviation.
yeah.
And but, you know, that's really worrying to me, because if you really sit down and think about it, yeah, okay, things might not be as good as in the good old days or whatever, but aviation is still incredible. It, you know, the experiences that it can give us, and the fun we can have, and the utility, and all these things that keep us coming back to aviation, we've got to be positive about them. So that, you know, that's really important to me. But I guess to answer your question, Todd, I think one of the reasons we selected flying clubs as an early initiative is because it does hit some of the really good bases that we want to hit. It's affordability. It's a good way into aviation. It's got community as part of it. It's a place for good quality flight instruction. And also, it's a little bit maybe under-recognized in aviation. It's an area that's not had a lot of attention from the, you know, the what we might call the mass media of aviation. So I think I got interested in it actually in Scotland, because I got into aviation in a flying club, and, you know, as we were saying, it's so expensive over there that clubs and groups have emerged as a coping strategy. In some ways, it's the only way you can fly. Now, here in America, I think things are different, because it is so much cheaper, and individual ownership is much higher, and it is much more prized. But I did join a flying club when I came here to Oshkosh, the Winnebago Flying Club, which is still going, and it's a great group of people. And just my observation, being in that club and being around here for 11 years, was that the flying club seemed to bring more people into aviation than both of the FBOs put together. And that's yeah. not to speak badly about the FBOs, it's more to speak positively about the flying club, that it just seemed to be a great path. And I think ultimately it benefits the FBOs, because more people are flying, and a lot of those people, such as myself, I went on and I bought my own airplane, and, you know, you're part of the whole system. So I think, you know, I had it sort of flagged in my own brain as an opportunity, and then when I started talking to AOPA in the spring of this year. I left EAA in January and flew around a little bit and did a little bit of a sabbatical, you know, and did my instrument rating. But I did start talking to AOPA and doing a little bit of consulting with them. And I discovered that AOPA had invested a sizable amount of resource in doing a very big survey of flying clubs. Because I guess AOPA had sort of had this gut feeling that I'd had, that there might be an opportunity here, and had gone and talked to 800 pilots about their experience of aviation and their experience of flying clubs. And one of the things that really jumped out at me from the research instantly was that how many flying clubs there already are in America. AOPA found 661 flying clubs that exist
wow.
in the country. And that was a lot more than intuitively I would have said exist anywhere. And then, interestingly, the research found that 55% of all pilots, it was a pretty high representative sample, and 55% of all pilots are either in a flying club or have been in a flying club at some point in their flying lifetime. So flying clubs are not sort of a niche thing in aviation. That more than half of all pilots are either in one or have been in one. And then the experience of those 55% is very positive. 96% of them said that their experience of being in a flying club was a positive experience. And that, in statistician terms, is unanimity.
Yeah.
And believe me, in aviation, we rarely get unanimity on anything. So
take what we can.
So, you know, as soon as I laid eyes on this research, you know, all of my opportunity kind of meters were going off the scales that, you know, this seemed to be something that just pushed a lot of the right buttons. It was, I think, good positioning for AOPA. It's sort of got a grassroots feel about it. It's a way to bring people into aviation affordably. But I think the social element is really, really important. AOPA hasn't just researched flying clubs. It's also done a lot of research recently on flying, flight training and flying schools.
Right.
Every piece of research that AOPA has ever done is saying that where there is community in aviation, where there is a social experience in aviation, there is a stickiness about aviation. Mm-hmm. People complete flight training. People hang around and stay involved in the community. And so flying clubs seem to be a really, you know, a really good way of doing that. And in some ways, you know, I'm also drawing on my EAA experience. We're sitting here at the home of EAA, and the founder of EAA, Paul Pobrezny, is still alive. And I actually met with Paul on Friday, and in our conversation, he reminded me of one of his sort of, you know, he's 91 years old now, and there are these sort of famous quotes that Paul makes that are sort of part of his philosophy. And he used one of his quotes. He said, it's the airplanes that bring us together, but it's the people that keep us coming back. And that is, you know, Paul has spent no money on research, but he has a lifetime of experience that tells him the same message, that there's a sort of excitement about aviation that brings people in, but it's the community of people that sort of really is the glue that holds aviation together. And in fact, the AOPA research sort of said that it was detailed enough that we could sort of explore what people think about flying clubs from the outside versus what they experience when they get on the inside. So when people have not been in a flying club, their perception of a flying club is they think of it very much in economic terms. It's, okay, there's a place that I can learn to fly, or that I can fly more cheaply than the alternatives. So it's very much a sort of a nuts and bolts kind of equation in their mind. When they get into a flying club, their sense of value of the club changes completely. They appreciate the cost of flying aspect, but what they really value is the community of friends that they build within the club.
Actually, I have to comment, we have in this club that the three of us belong to a member that has had a tough time making our meetings, especially on the weekends. And he said, I've got to join just to keep in with the, or renew, just because I love the email communication that we constantly send out to the membership and makes them feel connected, to your point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about your flying club a little bit? Because I think we had dinner before the show this evening. I think you've got a really good thing going there, Leading Edge. It's everything you were telling me about, you know, how your club operates and how you think is exactly the kind of thing that AOPA is going to be trying to promote on a nationwide mm-hmm. basis.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you mentioned what Paul's comment about planes bringing people in and then the people keeping it together. Our tagline is great planes, great people, and so the focus on the same things, and it just becomes evident. You don't have to read or research or talk to Paul. You can just see it. Okay, this is what's happening. So if we can reconfirm that, which someone very smart in the industry like Paul, you know, we violently agree.
I recently put a post up on my site that you know, I was at a crossroads with aviation. Had young kids and was, you know, knew aviation was something I was still in love with, but was, you know, questioning whether the money I was putting into it was worth what I was getting out of aviation and everything. And then I met the Leading Edge Flying Club here in Oshkosh. I met you guys at one of the meetup groups or one of the events, and it reinvigorated things for me. I finally found people I could share the airplane with, share the cockpit with, do it more efficiently. With my couple hours a month budget, I was able to get to farther places. I was able to learn a lot more by sitting in the back of a plane and watching more experienced pilots, or even potentially less experienced pilots, and sure. learning from them. And, you know, had I not stumbled into that club, I think my experience with the place I was flying may have had me kind of slowly fall away. And
yeah.
There was no community there, so there was no one to really bring me back. If I started to walk away, there was no one that was going to say, hey, Todd, where have you been? You've got to come back out to the airport. Whereas with this community, I've constantly got people that are like, hey, there's an empty seat. We're going to X, Y, and Z. Would you like to go with?
Right.
Of course. And for me, it's amazing. And I know that not all flying clubs are created equally, probably. But it's great to hear that there's 600 some odd clubs out there that, you know, everyone, if they're not in a club, should really look and at least introduce themselves to the pilots at the clubs in their neighboring airport.
I think there's some hunger out there for that as well. The goal that we've set ourselves is within 5 years, we'd like to grow that number from 661 to 1,000.
Wow.
And
that's a big number.
Well, it is a big number, and there was a little bit of nervousness in putting that out, but sometimes you've got to set yourself a goal because it gets everyone on a mission. But we actually, if I can put a little plug in here, we have a webinar scheduled for November 14th that is titled Starting a Flying Club. And for me, that was my first sort of test of the marketplace to see is there interest in this. And as of this morning, we had 331 people signed up to attend that webinar.
Nice.
So
great.
I only need six more, right? Is that if my math is correct? Eight more, and we're at our 1,000. But of course, they won't all form a flying club. But it is telling me there is actually. I'm meeting all the time people out there that are saying, hey, I'd love to do this at my local airport. So one of the things we will be doing is you know, helping people through the process of starting up, as well as trying to help the clubs that already exist. I think the key action that we're trying to take is to form or to create a network of flying clubs. It's something that will be a pretty low barrier to entry. We'll ask every club to sign up for a statement of common values that we're looking for all clubs to sort of share about how they're looking at their flying club and how they're looking at the aviation community. But beyond that, there's no cost to join. It's something that we just want to try and bring flying clubs together so they can share information, share best practices. I think just talking with you guys this evening about how your flying club operates, I've learned so much about good practices and some of the good things you're doing. And all I want to do is expose other people to your experiences. And I think there's probably some experiences out there that you could learn from.
Oh, absolutely.
Too.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, we want to also.
So, you know, I think the network will allow us to do that. And then looking... If we look a little bit more ambitiously, maybe a few years out, we can also think about interesting concepts like, okay, if there were a network of flying clubs, maybe we could start to introduce some benefits where if you are a member of your flying club in Chicago and another club in, say, Florida or California or wherever was prepared to offer some reciprocal benefits, you know, there may be some interesting things we can do that actually even enhance the member experience of the flying club.
That makes a lot of sense. We've talked about that in the past, but we'll see how it goes.
No, I think that there was bringing the community of aviation, back to the table here. And yeah, I was down in Central Florida earlier in October, and I ran into a gentleman from England. And he started talking. We started chit-chatting, and he mentioned that he's a member of a flying club in England. And I thought it would be so cool to have reciprocal rights to each other's flying clubs. So that way, if their members traveled internationally to Chicago, that they could, you know, they could feel welcome at our club, and vice versa. So I think it's important to not necessarily, you know, expand this into a global, you know, effort as well, because. You know, talk about the learning experience and the neat opportunity.
The cross-pollination opportunities is terrific. Although, Adam, I would come back to you and say you describe for us what to me is a very scary situation internationally. Are the issues the same, or do the solutions are they going to look different internationally?
I think already we've seen international interest in the Flying Club Network. We did form a Facebook page, which for me was just sort of just a way to channel the initial interest, and I've just been blown away. There's already nearly 1,500 people joined the Facebook group, and we've had clubs from various foreign countries posting on there. So I think some of the principles of clubs are exactly the same. There may be challenges in terms of getting reciprocal benefits, across borders and things like that with all the
right
regulatory stuff, but Al, was that your Led Zeppelin music that was playing?
It sure was.
So if you like your rock music, there is a great flying club in Britain that you need to go to, because there's an aeroplane that's registration is Golf Alpha Charlie Delta Charlie. So it's Golf AC/DC.
Yes.
It is also, it's a Tiger Moth. So it's a really cool aeroplane as well. You need to go and try that
one. I think we need a new club flyout. What do you think, Al?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm ready. Who doesn't love a little
ladders in the Archer and the Dakota?
The Archer, Dakota, Cirrus SR-22. We'll figure out how to get all three of them. And then the Sky Arrow. That would be one heck of a trip.
Exactly. Wow, that would be... I mean, talk about...
Yeah, Nirvana.
If you were to write that in your logbook, that would look pretty slick.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, you mentioned something there that actually plays into another initiative that we're starting to work on with the Center to Advance the Pilot Community. You described how you were, quote, sort of drifting out of aviation. You use words to that effect, and that's something that I've seen a lot of people do. That. You know, I think we've all had this experience. You'll meet someone you haven't seen in a couple of years, and you'll say, "Hey, how you doing? You still flying?" And they kind of like look down at their shoes, and they sort of say, "No, I kind of drifted out of it." And there is no medical reason they left. There is no financial reason they left. You know, they just sort of fell away. And that is one of the reasons that we wanted to work on flying clubs, because the research and one or two case studies that we've looked at with new flying clubs when they've started, they do seem to be a good way not just to bring in new people into aviation, but bringing people back that recently expired. But I think at AOPA we are interested in extending that thinking a little bit further. And I started doing some data analysis. One of the great... You know, the certain aspects of AOPA right now, it's just like me. I'm just like in a candy store. You know, I've got all these new sort of sources of information, all these highly skilled people I never had access to before. And there's a really interesting guy who works for AOPA called Tim Pennington, and no one's ever heard of him. And why should they? He sits all day behind this sort of bank of computer monitors, but he's like the data wizard of AOPA.
Nice.
And I went and sat with Tim, and it was kind of fascinating, because I said to him, how many of these people are there that have drifted away? I'd really like to sort of try and get a handle on it, because my intuition says there's a lot, but I don't know. So we started like crunching his database, and the first number that we came up with was how many people in the USA have earned a pilot's license and are probably still alive but don't fly anymore. And that number was 1,178,000.
Whoa.
Big number.
That's a big number.
Wow.
Big number.
But to be fair, a lot of those are in their 80s and 90s, yep, and probably a lot of medical issues and all kinds of things in a big number like that. But we played around with the numbers a little bit, and this was like really quick and really dirty, but Tim and I got to a feeling that, you know, 500,000 was a pretty good number of people that have drifted out of aviation, and we let them go. And you know, for me, that's a number worth looking at. And it goes back to there is a very basic old adage in business, which is that it's a lot cheaper to retain an existing customer,
yes,
than it is
absolutely
to acquire a new one. And I think, as an aviation community, we've done a lot of work, or at least a lot of thinking and talking, about how do we bring new people into aviation. But I've never heard much discussion at all about how do we stop people leaving, or if they have left recently, how do we work a little bit harder to bring them back in. So that is something that is an area I would like to work on. And the membership associations know this, EAA, AOPA, whoever it is, because if you want your membership to grow, it's about who you bring, it's about your acquisition rate plus your retention rate equals your success.
Yep.
And so I want to work a bit on the retention rate of aviation to make sure that we just fight, even if we fight 10% harder to keep people, I think we'll see some success that way.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's one of those things that, you know, Mark, yourself, I know you flew for many years, and then you were away from it for many years.
I was away for 25 years.
Yeah, so 25 years. And since you've come back, you're now doing a show like this. I know you like to parole the perimeter of the airport, and if you see someone looking at airplanes, you whisk them into the airport, and you show them around the hangar, and you're inspiring people. And each one of those people that have invested the time and energy to become a pilot and then somehow drifted away, if we can bring a few of those people back with the social technologies we have today with video and Facebook,
absolutely,
we can inspire a much larger group to help the front of the funnel.
Right.
But it is scary to think of how many people have kind of lapsed away, and I think there are ways to easily bring those back in. I think flying clubs are a great way to do that. You know, I think there's a lot of members in our club that don't fly actively, but they're back into aviation. They're letting it be a part of their life again, and their situation may change a year or two from now, and maybe they'll be able to do more with it. And I think it's important that we make those connections and keep those people within this circle, and they don't become a number that's in a database where there is no connection to them anymore. There needs to be that connection.
So I can share an idea someone is implementing quite successfully about how you bring people back in a formal way. At the AOPA Summit in Palm Springs, we just awarded the first of what will be an annual series of awards called Flight Training Excellence Awards. Mm-hmm. And this is a program that AOPA has run all through the year. We received 2,400 nominations from people who've been through flight training, and they nominated what they thought were the best schools. And it was actually a pretty rigorous process, and we identified 7 schools and 3 instructors who got top-level national awards, one of which was a flying club, actually, the East Hill Flying Club in New York State.
Cool.
One of the award winners is a company called Aviation Adventures, and they've got 3 flying schools in Virginia. And I am so impressed with Aviation Adventures. And if you're listening, go and look at their webpage and just see how they present themselves, see how they present aviation, and they hire really good people. In fact, Bob Hepp, the owner of the company, told me that he doesn't hire for stick and rudder skills. He said, I can find those anywhere.
Yes.
He hires for people skills, and that shows in their business. And one of the things you'll find on the Aviation Adventures website is a program called Rusty Pilots. And, you know, they're ahead of me, you know. they've already got a program in place where they are mailing lapsed pilots in their local area and saying, hey, come on in, we're going to do a seminar. You know, you've made this huge investment in flight training. Come on back in. We'll put it in a community context. And they only take 30 at a time. And I think they've done 3 of these now, and every single one of them is sold out. So
nice.
I think maybe they're on to something.
I think so, too. Actually, you know, you mentioned that award. Someone at this table was actually nominated.
What?
I nominated Mr. Waterloo for his efforts. Didn't know this, did
wow,
you?
Wow.
No, I did nominate you.
Spilling secrets.
But as part of that, I mean, I can think of all the wonderful things you do, but the Rusty Pilots kind of reminded me of an event that Al put on with the help of others, but he was the leader, and it was a pinch hitter course, very different from any other pinch hitter thing. We didn't want to train people how to fly as a pinch hitter, but give them a little quick reference card. If something goes wrong, here's how you grab control of an airplane and call for help. And that was pretty much it. But the people that were at that event, all of a sudden I heard from their partners that they flew with, not anymore, I don't want to fly, is, hey, will you take me up? I want to try this. Now these are people that didn't like being in an airplane, and they now are asking their partner, can you take me up in an airplane? I want to see if I can do this.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you for the nomination.
Well, I think well deserved, I might add.
Well, I think that there's a key point in this, and I think it's a responsibility. You know, if we can address on the flight training aspect of flying and flying clubs, that, you know, instructors. Well, I take personal ownership of trying to always deliver not just a pilot certificate to whoever I'm teaching, but a high impact aviation experience. And that is the thing that really delivers the retention. It gets people excited. It automates that curiosity that, you know, you always want to go out and do things better. So kind of like the Rusty Pilots program at Aviation Adventures, you know, it sounds like they really deliver that aviation experience to these guys and bring them back in, and now they want to stay because it's all of a sudden fun again. And I think that's a huge responsibility as an instructor, more so than teaching somebody how to fly, but how to pull that passion and deliver exactly what they want.
Life-changing.
Yep. Yeah. In fact, one of the things that I think Aviation Adventures does very well is developing. They're actually a traditional flight school. They're not. It's not a flying club. It's a business, and but it's a very successful and thriving business. And I think one of the reasons is because they have picked up on this concept of community. So I think the people that fly and learn and rent at Aviation Adventures, they feel part of a club, even though that formally they're not. And you know, there is nothing wrong with that. I certainly don't want there to be any sort of competition between the flight schools and flying clubs. I support anyone or anything that is moving aviation forward in a positive way.
Yeah.
Is there data? You know, I know it sounds like you, as you said, as a kid in a candy store, there's probably too much data. But is there data that shows that there's a lower dropout rate for people that come in through a flying club compared to a standard flight school?
Actually, there isn't. If I had been there setting up the survey that AOPA did, I would have definitely asked that question. But unfortunately, although it was really good work, and I shouldn't criticize it at all because it was been super, super helpful to the organization and to me, but that specific question didn't get answered, and that's one I would like to. I have an intuitive or an observational belief that the dropout rate is a lot less in a flying club environment, but I can't lie and say that I actually know that for a fact.
It seems intuitive, but it would be very interesting to see that data. And I guess part of me wonders, is that because of the fact that a lot of flying clubs are more not-for-profit oriented, and so maybe it's easier for them to, you know, target a student's goals and not worry about, you know, there's fewer people flying, they've got to get every bit of dollar out of the student that they can.
But why would they let them send them away then by not taking care of them? But anyway. I digress.
I think there is a different type of instructor at your average flying club than you would find at your average flight school. I think the flying club instructors tend to be people who are embedded in the local aviation community. They're vested in the interests of the club. They are club members. They just bought into the whole thing, and it's the instruction is often a second job for them in their local area or whatever. And I think that in itself just gives maybe a richer experience. Certainly in my personal experience, when I mentioned I did my pilot's license, I finished it in Florida. Well, that was a flight training factory, you know. There was no relationship. It was just bum, bum, bum. And I guess it got me my license. But if I think, you know, what's the best flight instruction I've ever had? I did my instrument rating this year with a guy called Tim Lemke here in Oshkosh. And Tim is just your archetypal, wonderful club guy. He's been in the flying club forever. You know, he's just totally embedded in it. And he's a great instructor. And that the richness of the experience that I had with Tim this year versus, you know, the sort of sausage factory thing was was really profound. And I should probably comment that despite having an amazing instructor, I nearly gave up on my instrument rating. And, you know, back to my job, I nearly gave up because the knowledge testing, I thought, was just, as a customer of aviation, was just awful. That I'm being forced to learn all of this archaic information that I will never use. And, you know, you really have to want to get your rating in order to get it. And so one of the things I'd like to take on with the work of the Center to Advance the Pilot Community is to maybe take a look at knowledge testing, because we live in the age of, you mentioned earlier, ForeFlight and the iPad and you know, these amazing tools that I think are making us better informed pilots and safer pilots. But you know, here we are being forced to learn, you know, I felt like I was very well qualified to fly IFR in 1985, you know. but it's 2012 and
that's when I was born.
We have to keep up. So
stop it.
There's a whole raft of things that I would like to work on that I probably should be realistic about in terms of expectations, because when you start working with the FAA on reform of something like knowledge testing or making airplanes cheaper to build and fly and things like that, these are all things that are actually quite important in the long run. but will take years of work. Even an organization like AOPA that's got way more staff on government advocacy than anybody else, it takes a long, long time to work something like that through the system. But I do want listeners to know that we're not blind to those things, and we're working as hard and as fast as we can on them.
And you touch on the FAA, and that reminds us that as we talk about flying clubs and FAA, there are other components here. Certainly there is manufacturers, there's service providers, and not just manufacturer of airplanes, of avionics, or anything aviation. And you can fix, it seems like, we got people excited about it, but it can't be just the flying club, or it just can't be the FAA. Now you were talking about manufacturers or service providers, other people that impact aviation. With only a small group of people and limited funding, you know, how do you get to impact those? Or some of those just going to have to take a back seat and you pick your low-hanging fruit?
Yeah.
Yeah. As I say, I'm still a pretty early stage with my learning of AOPA and how the organization ticks and things like that. And I think the government advocacy aspect is something that I will learn a lot more about, you know, as I work through, because I will make this observation about government advocacy and the associations. It is tough because the membership at large tends to like to see the organization pounding its fist on the table and saying, here's what we must have, you know, sort of like being, I don't know, the NRA of aviation and and being quite aggressive. That's what the membership likes to see. There's nothing will get you more praise than doing that. But the truth is, if you want to be effective in government advocacy, that is often and almost universally the worst way to go about it. Because it, particularly in something like aviation, where we're trying to build cross-party support for different aspects. You know, the fight against user fees, I think, is a great example of this. If you bang your fist on the table, you're going to send those people scuttling back to their party positions, and you make them afraid. And so sometimes being successful in advocacy is about building consensus.
Absolutely.
And sometimes the best way to build consensus is quietly behind closed doors. And that's a tough one for the associations, because it looks like you're maybe not being effective, or you're not banging your fist on the table, etc. But actually, some of your best work is done in an arena where it's just, you know. So hopefully people judge you in the long run. And I feel that if you ask me what is the single biggest difference, the single biggest reason that aviation is four times as expensive in the UK than it is over here, it is there is no effective advocacy body for pilots in the UK. There are one or two that try, but they're not big enough to be effective. And the fact you've got your AOPAs in America here, that in the long run, man, even if they weren't paying my wages, I'd be a juice paying member, and I was for 10 years before I was on the payroll, because it's in the long run they save you a ton of money.
Oh, I bet. And actually, I take a little bit opposite view on one thing. I've never liked the pounding. I'd say I don't want them to do that. So that's interesting. But I obviously they have been effective at what they do, and I've been paying my dues and happily.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. One of the things, you know, to relate that concept of, okay, doing the best work behind closed doors, I think that you can, in bringing it back to a flying club setting, I think sometimes, you know, this loops back into a community thing as well. But, you know, if a flying club actually sits back and does a self-reflection, mm-hmm. I think that they'll realize that they actually have something pretty spectacular. That, you know, in our own flying club, and I've said this to you, Mark, I feel that the flying club doesn't know what it has. If that makes any sense. If you look at the members and what everybody has to bring to a flying club, you know, the club is only just a bonding aid, you know, is the covalent bond between each other, which is kind of aviation. But everything that everybody does in their day-to-day lives and what their real specialties and hobbies are, they can bring that from the outside back into the club and really make it that much more of an experience. Kind of like, you know, sitting behind closed doors of an advocacy organization, you can really, you know, kind of be silent in that retrospect, a self-reflection, and really deliver that much more of an impact on on the greater good of, you know, whatever you're trying to do.
See, I love that. So Alex is relatively, and you joined the club this past summer, right? Something like that? But see, that diversity and his ability to see things that maybe we get a little too close, and actually Al is now a member of our board, as other people have joined, and I think that's so key, because he helps us, just like all of our board members, all of our members help us see what we are good at and where we do need to improve.
Right.
And so that's a very important point you bring up.
Absolutely. And I think it's also for the club members as well. The club members don't feel that they, you know, if a student pilot, you know, a student pilot says, hey, you know what, sitting next to a 777 guy and a corporate airline, a corporate pilot and X, Y, and Z, you know, they don't feel that they have anything to bring to the table, which is incredibly false, because they feel that their flying credentials are, you know, lackluster. But hey, you could be the CEO of a major company, and you have that value to add to the flying club. You know,
absolutely.
And not, you know, I would say I'm probably the least well-rounded person in the club, because I'm in aviation just nonstop, where this is like my hobby and all that. But you know, there's people that write books and have businesses and.
How come everyone in our
cool
club
things.
Says, when I grow up, I want to be like Al Waterloo?
I throw it right back at them. I want to be them. No, but I mean, I think it's fun in both ways.
Yeah. I was listening to a talk by Kermit Weeks the other day. This is the guy that he's got the world's largest private collection of aircraft, and he's a multi millionaire. And he said, when I grow up, I want to be me.
Wow.
Wow, that's someone that's had the self-realization.
Yeah.
they cross the finish line or are getting there exactly as they want.
Yeah. Well,
can I raise another theme that is sort of on my mind about the, you know, this sort of blank slate that I'm looking at right now?
Mm-hmm.
It is that, I suppose with great respect to this conversation and your listenership, there is an element of aviation that we're sort of talking to ourselves.
Right.
And if we're going to grow, we have to find a way to reach outside of the aviation bubble that we all love and live in and invite new people into it and things like that. So this has obviously come up as a theme in the ideas that are being thrown at me. And, you know, some people have come and said, you know, okay, what we need is a big advertising campaign, and let's get everyone together, and they can all throw money in a pot, and we'll get some nice ads on the TV, and we can promote aviation. And as I said earlier, I don't feel I've received any bad ideas, and I don't think that is necessarily a bad idea. It may be impractical, because I'm not sure that the resources and money exists in aviation to do that. And also, there have been a couple of efforts in the past made to do something like that. You may be familiar with things like Be a Pilot and G18 yep. 2000, and the collective memory of aviation and some of the leading players in aviation, the people that funded those programs, is not particularly positive in terms of what they felt the return on the investment was. So there just doesn't seem to be an appetite to do something like that, even if I'd love to see it, but it may not be possible. And I've been thinking, okay, but that still doesn't relieve us from the need to stop talking to ourselves and start talking outwards. So I'm interested in some of your thoughts on this, Todd, because my sense is that you've been thinking about social media and how we can use new technology and Facebook and videos and blogs and things like that to reach out a little bit. Because I haven't thought it all through, but intuitively I'm seeing a really powerful force there. We seem to have an ability that even a year or two ago we didn't really have, to share the experience of aviation with a wider population of people.
Yeah, no, it's a couple really important points there. I think the first part is, I think part of the reason that our community is so close-knit and so tight is that it is kind of a closed community in that you don't, at the office every day, unless you're out Waterloo, have people talking about aviation or at AOPA. But, you know, in my office, if I try and start an aviation conversation, it's not going to go that far. So we gravitate back towards people that have aviation close to their hearts. But you're absolutely right that we need to be projecting that outwardly. And I think, you know, a lot of the technologies that are out there can help us do that in a more effective way. I think there are a lot of people that may not think about aviation right now or think that that's something that they should go and achieve, but I guarantee you they had a moment in their life where it was important. There's a pilot at Gauntlet Warbirds in Chicago who says, you know, every kid has a train phase, and you know, it lasts a year, and then they have this. And he goes, "Well, I had a plane phase, and it's lasted me 30 years." And
nice.
I think we have to find those people that once had that inkling or that interest in aviation, and show them what's fun about aviation. Not show them that, well, you might be able to get from Chicago to Cleveland a little bit quicker than the airlines and save a few dollars, or not have to wait through the line. But show them the fun and the excitement. And I think with the GoPro cameras, the in-flight cams that we can put in our cockpits to show people really fun things they can do in an aircraft, the joy of flying, can really help inspire some of those people to come into aviation and to say, hey, you know, next time you go flying, maybe take me with, or I'd love to come out to the airport and see your airplane, or show it to my kids. And so now people that weren't going to partake in that conversation all of a sudden are interested, and they know who to go to talk about it. They know somebody that can open the hangar gate for them. You know, it used to be that you could walk up to the airport and walk up and see an airplane and talk to the pilot. Now, in so many places, those gates kind of prevent you from getting in. And let's make sure that each of us as a pilot, you know, takes ownership to bring some of those people in and widen that conversation.
And only a simple data point, but a friend of my son's actually was afraid of heights, didn't want to get in the airplane. I said, let's take a trip. Took him down to Peoria to see a house he had built, and he never followed through, but the thing is, he was afraid to go, and at the end of the flight, he said, I want to get my license. Now he needs to take that step, but, you know, I think, and Al, you and I had the two young men, the 16-year-old that's solo, and he talked about his flight club at high school. So I've gone to our local high school. I'm trying to get something going because there is a tremendous need from a hiring perspective coming up with all the retiring pilots.
Right.
And I think if we could just start talking to those people about the opportunity, because it isn't part of their normal vernacular, but there's an opportunity, and it's cool, and it's fun.
Right.
Well, and your friend now, you know, surely from time to time aviation will come up, and he'll talk about that experience. I flew with a friend of mine down to Peoria, and it was the neatest thing, and it just widens that net and that potential reach. I think it's extremely important that we look outwards rather than constantly.
Yeah, right. The old inside the fence versus outside the fence people. Yeah. I agree.
I think that there's to add on this point of being able to, project aviation using all these different outlets, I also think that just as a whole, it makes aviation better because it modernizes, modernizes the experience for the user. Therefore, the whole, I guess, entity or industry looks better. It shines brighter. So people will, you know, just kind of take natural, you know, attraction to that through, kind of like a fly in a bug zapper, right? You know, but once, hopefully that when they touch it, they don't just go, and go away. But, you know, seriously, it actually makes aviation better, which makes it therefore that much more attractive for people looking in.
Very much so. And as we continue the conversation here with Adam Smith, the Senior Vice President of the Center for the Advancement of the Pilot Community, you know, I was wondering, you threw out some numbers, Adam, about going from 661 to 1,000 flying clubs. You talked about the 500,000.
Hold on. I did notice that Mark wrote that down, so that is now a goal.
Oh, no.
he was rifling through his papers to find that 1,000 number.
It is a published goal. And by the way, I should mention that, you know, we were just talking about technology, and I mentioned that I had 331 people signed up for my webinar. Well, one of my colleagues in the office has already texted me to say I was wrong, and I have 475 people.
Wow. Yeah. Make it 1,200 then.
Yeah, there we go. It's down in ink.
Thanks, Charlie.
But to that point, you know, is there a certain set of metrics by which you'll measure your own, not necessarily performance, but progress against the goal that we can say at the end of 3 months, 6 months, a year, okay, we hit this number, we feel like we're right on target, or we need to do more?
We do, but I haven't memorized them, so
enough,
I can remember the thousand. So, okay. So, who holds a guy like me accountable? Well, my boss and Craig and the board of trustees of AOPA, but also in the way a program like this works is also it tends to also be accountable to the people that are giving the money, and we are in a fundraising mode. And some great supporters of aviation, of AOPA, are stepping up and actually financially supporting programs like this. And when we make proposals to them, we do sort of we literally will say, okay, by the end of year one, we want X hundred. By the end of year two, three, four, and five, and that gives us something, you know, to sort of. The donors can hold us accountable and say, they can come back in 5 years' time and say, well, I gave you this amount of money. What do you do with it?
Right.
And I think that's healthy, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that is. And that's kind of it's needed. It's kind of that self-reflection type of thing again. You know, hey, are we actually doing what we're supposed to be doing and making things better?
Kind of a progress, not perfection type of thing.
Right. But, you know, what's interesting, rather than just holding you, Adam, you or the AOPA accountable, how do we hold ourselves accountable? Because we're very much part of this mission is everybody else. So how can we hold ourselves accountable?
Exactly.
Well, I think you guys are doing a great job already. You're running a very successful or part of running a very successful flying club. You're doing a weekly radio show promoting the good gospel here.
We're just having fun.
I just heard you're going into schools, and Todd's writing an amazing blog about his aviation experience. That's the kind of stuff that we need. You know, earlier I spoke about, I think there are thousands of people like you. In some ways, if there's one thing I'd like us to try and hold ourselves accountable to, is to be positive about aviation.
That's so important.
I do sometimes see really good people who I know love aviation and know support aviation talking aviation down. And I think we probably need to hold ourselves accountable, particularly when we're in public places and when we're on public forums on the internet and things like that. Let's be positive and make sure that we don't catch ourselves talking aviation down. And by the way, if you catch me doing it, please call me on it. I'm maybe not immune from this myself. I'm 2 months into the job. I certainly haven't got it all figured out by now yet, but and probably never will completely. But I do feel that there's something very important about my job and the role and the investment that AOPA is making to sort of try and organize all the good people to sort of. I know we're all flying on a parallel course here. We all believe in aviation, and we all want good things for aviation. And the more that we can kind of get ourselves flying in a good formation, I think the stronger that we'll be as a group. So there'll be different ways that we'll try and do that, but I think fundamentally and philosophically, that's what I'm trying to do.
Absolutely. I got a tweet here from someone that wanted me to ask a question and is asking, what is AOPA doing to not only grow the population of flying clubs, but also enhance existing clubs?
So the question was, as well as starting clubs, what are we going to
do? Yeah, so the guys that exist now, what are we going to do to help them? Go ahead, you might have touched on it.
Well, I guess that goes back to the network concept that I talked about earlier. We're going to not just do webinars on how to start a flying club. There will be further webinars about how to, you know, run a successful flying club. And as you know, Mark, I already twisted your arm at least halfway up your back to do a webinar for us about, you know, to share the success of your club, because I think you're doing some really good things. So I think there'll be opportunities like that through things like webinars. We do plan to start a monthly e-newsletter that will be directed specifically at leaders of flying clubs, again, to share best practices and provide a forum for people to interact. And some of this is quite technical. You know, we were going through your insurance documentation earlier, and your listeners need to know there's like a 30-page document here, which is reflective of the. I guess I'm getting a photograph taken.
Yeah, that's a big document. You post this on Twitter.
This goes on Twitter. Okay,
better than the post office.
But you know, some of the insurance issues are complex, and most flying club leaders are volunteers, and have only got a limited amount of time to deal with all that complexity and bureaucracy. So, anything that we can do to sort of bash that down a little bit and share good knowledge and good practices, I think is going to. That's what a network does, and in some ways, this is what an association does.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, what AOPA is doing here is probably classic association work. It's the power of many is stronger than we are as individuals, and for whatever reason, no association of flying clubs has ever formed. So, you know, we're playing that role, I guess, to bring people together. So, we are working on knowledge sharing, network building. I think there will be some specific strategic things that we will work on. In the survey work we've done with the existing flying clubs, we are hearing a lot about insurance. We're hearing a lot about financing as being specific areas where people would like some extra help. I think with insurance, a lot of the issue tends to be about the bureaucracy and difficulty of insurance. With financing, it's about the difficulty just of getting financing.
Right.
I think marketing is another area that clubs are really looking for help with. When they look at an organization like AOPA, they see that we've got this giant megaphone, and anything that AOPA can do to help drive new members to the clubs is going to help. So we started that. We launched an online flying club finder, which we're still knocking some of the kinks out of, and that will be developed and further invested in over the next few months. So, you know, at a national level, AOPA will be hopefully sent. You know, we've got a lot of student pilots as they come into aviation, come in through AOPA, so we can maybe show them that there are opportunities in flying clubs. Maybe at a more local level, we can help flying clubs with local marketing. We are putting a computer system in right now, which should make it possible for a locally based flying club to tap into the national databases that AOPA has in order to grab a mailing list or something like that. So, you know, this is a pretty long term program for us, and over the next year or two, people hopefully will start to see some good things coming out.
And I mentioned the importance of the communications that I get the feedback from about sending out just an email, what's going on. It doesn't even have to be much. And to me, that I would hope would also be part of the AOP effort, because sometimes it's easier just not to send the email, to just kind of let it ride. But that's some of the value that the members of the Flying Club look forward to. They get value out of that. And so AOPA can even provide some structure or formalization of a communication from the leadership to the membership.
Yeah, so things like newsletter templates. There is, I think, some demand out there for standardized websites that look really nice and have good functionality. I know some clubs and flight schools have got great websites and don't need that, but others, there are still quite a lot of flying clubs that don't have any website at all yet, you know?
Right.
Or that last time it was updated was 2005.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly right.
Yeah.
So, as we look here, I know that you have a hard stop coming up in the next 5 minutes or so. Are there other things that you were hoping that you would be able to talk to our listeners about, or anything else about your role that, you know, is, again, something either we can help with or that you would like our listeners to know?
Well, I think we've covered quite a large part of the scope of my work. Certainly 2 months into the job.
Yeah,
here.
Right.
Yeah. You've done a lot.
You know, maybe we can have a chat at some future point.
Yeah.
And you know, come back and you can grill me on how it's going. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think we've hit on most of the main points that I wanted to cover. I'm glad we talked a lot about being positive tonight, and I'm glad we talked a lot about collaboration, because I think that, you know, there are some really good things going on out there. When I look at things like open airplane or social flight, or you even mentioned things like GoPro and yep. these amazing technologies mm-hmm. and everything that's happening on the iPad, Facebook, etc., it gives me a lot of confidence. There's some powerful forces here that are starting to come together that can benefit us in our future. So, you know, I'm if I didn't say I wasn't somewhat daunted by the mission that I've been given, I wouldn't understand the mission. So there, you know, there's an aspect of it that is like, heck, I sweat, you know, and that's maybe not a bad thing. But it is also, I'm showing up for work every day with a big smile on my face. I'm working with great people, both inside the building and outside the building. The community of people in aviation is just phenomenal. And that's where I take my inspiration from. And, you know, we'll absolutely do our best and use our resources as wisely as we can. And hopefully, over time, people will... you know, appreciate and support.
Go ahead, Todd.
I was just going to say, you know, this is a role that when I first heard they were creating this, you know, center to reduce the decline in the pilot community, it was something that you knew needed to be done, but I kind of questioned, you know, what would it do and how would it work? And just hearing you talk about it tonight, obviously I feel like, you know, they've picked the right person for this. I'm very excited to see that, you know, they've got a pilot that is, you know, absolutely at the core, just passionate about this charge, and I feel very, very hopeful. You know, I know that was one of the things you mentioned is that you want to see more positive thoughts out there. But I feel very charged after this conversation tonight about the opportunities and the ways that we can, you know, start to slow the decline. It's not going to be a quick, you know, tomorrow we're going to start to see a lift in the pilot population, but we can start making progress against it.
Absolutely.
Very excited.
And we created this radio show to find amazing people doing amazing things because we're very passionate about this industry succeeding. And certainly the things you've talked to us about, I think, just proves, you know, there is a lot out there. And I don't think of this as a small world. People always say that. I think it's a close community or a close world when it comes to pilots. And there is so much positive. And I'm excited about what we can all do if we all head toward the same, you know, not the same solution, but solve the same problem. Then the solutions will become evident.
Right.
And I even had, I'm looking for it real quick, I had a message that a lot of messages actually came in. This guy is very interesting. So you got that and all this.
Was that my wife?
No, I didn't want to read you that one. Experts and, you know, very positive comments from listeners. Actually, some talked about dialing in and we ran out of time here, so... We'll have to take those as separate things. So thank you so much for coming here to the Hilton Garden Inn at the Oshkosh Airport and being a guest on our show.
Listen, thank you for coming up here. I feel kind of guilty that I didn't get down to you in Chicago. Maybe I can do that sometime. But I will give you a wave tomorrow as I pass because I have 10 hours of daylight tomorrow. I need to use them to fly my cub from Oshkosh to its new home in Frederick. So I think I can do it.
It sounds like an awesome
trip. It sounds like an awesome trip, but with all the TFRs, he's going to go by way of Mexico.
A lot of zigzagging.
I'm dodging TFRs, but thankfully I'm going slow enough that I can keep up to date on my iPhone or something.
Exactly, and the F-16s won't be able to slow down enough to stay with you. Very good.
Yeah, but thank you very much, Adam. This is it's been a real pleasure. I think that collaboration of just the whole pilot group and your efforts, your staff's efforts, it's going to be a really exciting journey
and fun.
Oh, absolutely. Fun. You know, and there's nothing wrong with aviation. You know, I think that's the first thing to acknowledge. Aviation's awesome. Keep the positive light. And you know, we're gonna make it exactly how we want it. It's awesome.
Very good. So thanks, Adam.
Well, thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much. Well, I know, Todd, just looking at you, you got a big smile on your face.
Yeah, well, you know, any night spent talking about aviation is a good night. But this is a, you know, as I said, I feel recharged again. I think. There's such great opportunity here. I think they're doing AOPA's found the right person to kind of spearhead this effort.
Right.
You know, as I mentioned, I very strongly believe in the Flying Club. I think there's so much benefit to being part of one, and I hope that they do succeed in bringing out, you know, 400 new Flying Clubs. I mean, if we're at 600 now and they take it to 1,000,
that's gonna be pretty slick.
That's pretty impressive, and you know, I do think there's so many great things that individual flying clubs are doing. A couple of different people have tweeted, you know, the URLs to their flight clubs, and just looking at some of the links and seeing some of the things that they're doing, I think if we can find a way to better allow these clubs to interact with each other and share conversations with each other, it's only going to improve the whole industry.
Absolutely, and I think it's the thing that I'm probably most excited about is that we can connect on. You know, I'm always looking for adventures, and there's nothing that says that you can't vicariously live through other flying clubs' adventures. If you want to fly out on the East Coast, you know, to be in touch and hear stories, that's even half of an aviation experience. The hangar talk, to tell stories. Who loves, you know, who doesn't love hearing aviation stories? I think that's going to be one of the neat ways of connecting flying clubs and people bringing them back to flying clubs. Just the amount of stories that are going to be able to be heard and told.
Yeah, I'd love to see just even in the Chicago area, you know, or the Midwest area, more flight clubs trying to get together. And I think we as the leading edge flying club should host a fly-in to our airport and host other clubs to come meet our membership, and then do the same thing with other clubs. Go, get all the clubs in the Midwest area to make a trip to Michigan or make a trip to Wisconsin to get together groups of clubs and maybe leadership of those clubs to talk about what they're doing. Because I'm just really very recharged now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I have been contacted by other flight clubs to do some of that. So that's already started, and there's a lot of people out there that want to see this succeed. Right, and they're willing to put the extra effort to make it do so.
Right, absolutely, and it's going to be really neat to see. This is step one. We're 2 months into this whole thing, right? This is going to be a long, long, drawn out. And I hate to use the word battle, but you know, it's going to be a long process to get this curve swing in the opposite direction. And you know, once flying clubs are kind of, you know, the underway per se. It's going to be really fun to explore what else is in store and what's next. It's kind of a new horizon.
Well, and not to get wax poetic here, but we always talk about in flying and even in life, it's not the destination, it's the journey. So when you talk about a long drawn out battle or whatever, we'll see progress all the way. So
yeah.
There'll be a lot of smile moments along the way. Hey, that's an improvement. Hey, that's really cool. Or he talked about some things with the rusty pilots. I think that's a great idea.
Seriously.
Yeah, I want to go do something with that, and the Chicago area's probably got a lot of rusty pilots besides me.
And what I think I really liked, what I heard there, was the talk where he says that there may be an ability to open up databases of pilots to clubs. So
right.
Someone like Leading Edge could have a much easier job finding those rusty pilots to promote a new rusty pilot type program. So
right
now, it might be a little bit of a daunting task to try and find those people, bring them in, and hold a seminar. But if you have the benefit of opening up a database of pilots, that's very powerful.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a part of the reason I think that the rusty pilot, I like the idea of the rusty pilots.
Sounds like a band.
Yeah.
Live.
Well,
the Rusty Pilots.
Yeah, the Rusty Pilots are some type of like craft brew or something like that, you know. But you can have a lot of the flight training that I give in at the Leading Edge Flying Club, in our flying club, is I wouldn't say rusty pilots, but pilots looking to be more proficient. They feel that they're rusty.
Or just to take the next step.
Yeah,
right?
Take the next step to whatever they're looking for. So rusty doesn't necessarily mean, oh, I haven't flown in 30 years. Rusty could mean, hey, I feel that I could be more proficient. It's that automatic kind of curiosity bubbling along.
Well, and after all, a good pilot is always learning.
Exactly.
Thank you, Captain Schmelzer. See, I wanted to remind, and I promised to do this, and it's with a lot of pleasure, that we are the beneficiaries of the folks here at the Hilton Garden Inn at Oshkosh, which, if you happen to not fly in, it's located on 20th Avenue off of Highway 41 at South Park. But we got the pleasure to fly in tonight and get the private aircraft ramp, which is so cool. They have like 8 or 10 spots here, so when you fly in, you can pull right up to the Hilton there on the west side of the field. And as we've seen, newly renovated rooms, they have the lobby that you, as you had a guest room that was newly renovated.
Yeah, that was where our first, the first simple flight show ever was.
And then here, one still near the beginning because we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
They have a full service restaurant here, a lounge with 4,800 square feet of flexible meeting space, and can accommodate groups up to 400 people. So maybe someday we'll have a studio audience of 400 people here at the Hilton Garden Inn at Oshkosh.
Probably. You know what? I got to put here's one thing that's really cool about this Hilton is that when I was here, after my show was done in one of the newly renovated rooms, I came down here. I was here by myself. You know, talk about feeling like I wouldn't say loser or whatnot, but just like, how could I come here by myself? You know, all the people I know in aviation, whatever. But so I came down here in the restaurant afterwards, and I grabbed some dinner, and the community aspect of this place was just off the charts. It was a great place. You know, people saw me sitting by myself, and I was chit-chatting back and forth, going in and out of conversations with people I was sitting around, but all of a sudden, you know, it's like, boom, you're soaked up in the group. And it was kind of this is a great place during at least the Oshkosh Air Show to stop by and enjoy the community.
Actually,
it's
during the
fantastic.
Air Show, I always come over here because it's just a wild time. Like I say, during the happy hour, you get to see not only the people that we know in every day, but some of the famous people that maybe we've been buying training from. The King family was here, you know,
yeah.
John and Martha and different things like that. You never know who you're going to run to at the Hilton Garden Inn here in Oshkosh on Whitman Field.
Right, exactly. Well, that was an outstanding conversation, and we get to go into a little bit more of a relaxed conversation. But first,
you're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Wow. Well, so, you know, to relax, talk about a great opportunity to do hangar talk.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, Adam said that he has an airplane that's flying out to
a cub
out to Frederick tomorrow. But he also has another airplane, which is kind of cool. And I think it's a beautiful airplane. And I would love to have one of these. It's a Cessna 180.
Yeah, no, and he actually, when he talked about it, obviously had a lot of pride coming through.
Yeah.
And I can understand why. And he just rattled off. He could have been the Cessna salesperson.
Absolutely.
Well, he nailed it on the head. I mean, it's an airplane that you can take almost anywhere. You can carry lots of people. You get a good speed out of it. There's very little that goes against it.
As
anti-American or whatever as it seems, or anti-aviation, I have relatively few Cessna hours. I've never been in a 140.
It's like not saying at baseball and apple pie.
I know. I'm embarrassed to admit it. You know, I've been in a few hours here of a 172 or back in my day a 150.
He's a plant. He's a communist plant.
I guess so.
Seriously.
But we have at Pewaukee, and I, again, Chicago executive. It's hard for me to still call it Chicago executive, but we have a wonderful, beautiful 185 Skywagon, and that thing, you can hear it take off. The owner takes care of it meticulously, and he and his wife doing all the fly-ins and all of that, and I just love that airplane, and I got to get up the courage to say, hey, can I go for a ride, please, in your 185?
I've learned a long time ago that if you just ask, people are always willing to take you up for a flight, so yeah. Let's ask them.
Especially.
We can all fit in that airplane, too. You know what, that would be a good social airplane. So one of our listeners and another fellow club member, he calls good social airplanes for a flying club, and that would be one of them because they can haul all of it. But the airplane that we flew up in was Piper Dakota. Talk about another good social airplane where you can fit four people, all of your stuff, as much fuel as your bladder could possibly stand, you know, and do that. So that's kind of a neat, there could be a whole new subculture of social airplanes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an airplane that can carry a radio station in its back.
Actually, I look around here, and to take over this conference room at the Hilton Garden Inn, this looks pretty impressive. We brought all of this gear here.
Seriously.
And set it up, and it's very professional, and hopefully our audience thinks it sounds professional.
Yeah. Well, hey, we even need a luggage cart to haul this stuff
yeah,
in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I think it's kind of funny how all this has kind of turned into a technology fest as well as a aviation fest and all that. And there's a lot that goes into all this stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I have to admit, even though it's late, you know, we have, what, 9:40, so we got about 20 minutes go, and then we'll have to tear down, put the archive up, and get back in the airplane. I'm looking forward
seriously to
that trip home.
Tonight's going to be a beautiful night to fly. I mean, you're still we had a full moon a few nights ago, so we'll have this beautiful light over the lake. It's just going to be a great night to fly.
I think we might have to go hug Lake Winnebago pretty closely, you know, and see the reflection of the moon.
Speaking of Winnebago, a few moments ago we were talking about, you know, the idea of getting clubs to fly out and meet other clubs.
Yeah.
One of our listeners who has the Twitter handle Wired for Flight, Sam is a member of the Winnebago Flying Club, which I believe may be the same club that Adam talks so highly of.
It is.
You know, he suggested that at their meeting this Saturday, they were talking about just that and that they should have a chili cook-off. And so I think we should make an effort to say Leading Edge and Winnebago, let's form something. Let's plan to either fly our three planes or four planes up here someday to meet with them or get them to come down to Chicago Executive and then invite any other flying clubs in the area. But, you know, we've got a great start there. So
Yeah. Chili cook-off, throwdown, you're on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know.
I'm not sure I want to be in a plane after a whole bunch of people have had chili, so maybe we should invite them to visit us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm very proud of our dog day afternoons.
Yep.
And Al probably doesn't even know that comes from an old movie, Dustin Hoffman movie. But dog day afternoons, which is basically born out of sneaking away from work, getting a hot bunch of hot dogs and a bunch of pilots to sit on the ramp and watch all the airplanes come and go. We should have them down for a dog day afternoon.
Yeah, or bring, you know what we need to do is bring back the pancake breakfast.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, I actually am embarrassed because I love pancakes. I didn't go any pancake breakfast this summer, and I'm actually very mad at myself. But let's extend it. But pancakes are good, too.
Yeah, pancakes are good. You know, everybody here in Chicago, everybody goes to Janesville, or probably a lot of people in the area go to Janesville for pancakes, which the pancakes there are really good, but...
Not like Lone Rock, Wisconsin.
Really?
Oh, man. You can only eat one.
One?
And it's just west of Madison. It's just so big, but it's a cute little place at the end of the runway. I think that's what, just like the Hilton here, we taxied right up to the place. At Schaumburg, you can taxi right up to Pilot Pete's. Even at Watertown, you know, you have to cross the street. I love taxiing up and parking right outside the place, and it just adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that would be a good question for our listeners, and feel free to tweet this, or you can call us live and be on the show with us at area code 312-436-0356. Again, that's 312-436-0356. And tell us where your favorite fly-in restaurant is.
I'll throw in one that I absolutely love is at Sunken Lunken, Lunken Field in Cincinnati, Ohio. There's a place that you can just pull right up to called Sky Galley. You taxi right up to. And there's always a crowd there, and they've got an outdoor seating area, so you can sit there and hear the planes and feel the propeller blowing the wind around you. You know, the food's good, not great, but it's the atmosphere that makes it. That's one of my favorite fly-in places.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know which one is yours.
What is it?
Would it be at Kilo Echo Yankee Echo?
It would. How did you guess?
Do I bring
that up on every show? I bet I do.
If we could just find a way to taxi across the road there, then it would meet all the criteria.
Yeah. So that's at Eagle Creek out in the Indianapolis area. What's the name of that restaurant where
Rick's
you can eat
Boatyard it? Rick's Boatyard Cafe.
Rick's Boatyard Cafe. Oh, it's very good. And again, just across one little highway.
It's not even a highway.
No,
it's just a street.
It's a two-lane road that you can just walk across after you park your plane. It is a great place.
Beautiful reservoir and patio there.
That's I always envision it would be awesome to have a caravan on floats and just, you know, you land.
Do you know any seaplane pilots?
You're looking at one.
I know.
Yeah, no. You know what? I've learned in our flying club there are a ton of seaplane pilots.
No,
I thought you were going to say that every plane could be a seaplane once.
Yeah. Right. Okay, the Cessna 310, lower to the floats.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is that I had lunch with one of our club members earlier this week, and you know he was going down. He has I believe an ATP multi-engine, you know, seaplane rating, but he doesn't have a single engine, which I can't, it baffles me. He has a hot air balloon rating. He's got all these different ratings and flown tons of different airplanes. He doesn't have a single engine seaplane. So At lunch, he pulled out these old, you know, 1960s, 1970s, like, seaplane propaganda. And there were, like, 310s and Cherokee 6s on floats. And
310?
Yeah, 310s. There's a Piper Aztec on floats and these and all this.
What do they
articles.
Do with the gear?
I mean, what cut it off? I don't know.
Tape it down, duct tape.
Yeah, but it was. I thought it was pretty cool. I was like, wow, this... You know, to have a Cherokee 6 on floats, that would be pretty gnarly.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be a perfect plane, actually, now that I think about it. It carries a bunch. You got the 6 seats. And
oh, yeah.
And we should look into that. I'm going to hit controller tonight and see if there isn't something out there that's available.
Yeah, on floats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The club, we live in the Midwest, and maybe we can't use it year-round. Maybe in the winter we can put skis in some of these planes.
Yeah, now you're talking. Now you're using
that. Is that a separate rating or endorsement?
Ski plane? I don't think it's a separate. It's not a separate rating. I don't think there's a separate endorsement either. I'm not sure.
I defer to you. If you don't know, then I don't know.
That's another thing I got to look up. But I'm almost positive that there's not. That's not the official answer.
I'd like to jump back to the question of great fly-ins, and I don't know if either of you guys recognize these places, but. Sam at Wired for Flight on Twitter suggests Stearman Bar and Grill at Stearman Field in Benton, Kansas.
Ooh.
Don't know. It sounds good.
It sounds wonderful.
And then we've got another one, Sky Acres, 44N, sloped runway, nice little restaurant. Block Island is a third suggestion for Maz Clam Chowder.
Nice. Ooh, that sounds really delicious.
You know what? I didn't expect to come out with new flyout places, and that's exactly what I'm getting. Please make sure you get those to me there, Todd, because I definitely want to try them.
Yeah, we're going to have to nail those down. Yeah. Flying club, you know, pilots like to eat. So flyouts, you know, we need to start doing stuff like that.
Let me ask you a question. If you were to open up an airport restaurant, what would you call it?
That's a tough question. I've always thought about that, and I've likened it to what would my airline call sign be? It's so hard to figure out, but I might call it Lean of Peak or something like that.
I like that. I don't know, because in the pancake thing, I always thought, like, instead of flapjacks, we'll just call it flaps.
Nice, I like that.
You like that?
Flaps? Yeah, I'm not even going to venture to say anything witty or fun here, because I know in about 30 minutes the great title and great name of restaurant will come to me, but
not right now. Come on, don't you work under pressure like this? Yeah. You know what's interesting is, and let's see, we have one of our loyal listeners, Mr. Joe Nemec. He called in the show. Remember him? He was the glider guy,
and he came to our
hot dog day. And he, you know, he's been texting me all, and I'm sorry for not being able to get back to you quite yet, but he's been asking how we can join a flying club. You know, I think there's this buzz that Adam was talking about, but he said that there's no endorsement needed for a ski plane.
Okay, cool.
That's awesome.
That is. So, actually, you know, you talk about that, and I think of the folks up at Flying Wild Alaska. You watch that show, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the things they did, and see, Jim Tweedo, he flew a 140, right? What was that? That Cessna?
Cessna 185.
That was the 185?
Yeah.
I think it might have been.
Okay. I love that. I would love to be able to do that, fly out in skis and land on a nice snow-packed runway.
I had the opportunity when in Alaska to do a glacier landing, and I got to sit in the right seat of a beaver. You know, I told the guy that I was a pilot. So he said, all right, come on up front with me. Normally they, I don't think, necessarily fill that seat. But that was magical to set that down on snow, also on a very kind of steep mountain and kind of treacherous terrain. But, wow, that's I came away from that saying this is the way to enjoy flying.
Oh, absolutely. There was a you know, what's pretty fun is that – so we went down to a group of old flying college buddies. We went down to Jack Brown's seaplane base to get our seaplane ratings. But that was for a bachelor party. So we have this joke of, okay, what are we going to do for the next bachelor's, you know, bachelor party? Well, we found an Alaskan bush flying course somewhere near Fairbanks. And we're like, Yeah, we're going to have to sign up and do, you know, to learn, take a bush flying course for the next batch.
How do I get on that invitation?
This is my kind of batch.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Well, I think it, just neat things like that. You don't even realize that there's courses and cool things to do like that with a pilot's license out there.
When you travel to an area, we talked a little bit about the flying club and use it. Do you take advantage of maybe getting an instructor and going up in something new when you just doing your regular travels?
Yeah, I would say so.
I've done it several times. I've done it in New York and New Jersey. Did it in Denver. I did a mountain flying course, which was really neat. You know, flying around the Midwest, mountains is something I never encounter. And so when you see in the textbooks, you know, all the information about flying in mountainous terrain, I kind of skipped over it. I just flipped those pages. I knew what I had to answer for the written exam. But it was neat to actually go experience it. And so that's one I highly recommend. If someone's out west near the Rockies or something like that, seek out a mountain flying experience. Spend an hour with an instructor and learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think it, going out and it's so cool to do that. It really opens up and allows you to get exactly what you want out of aviation. It's just such a wonderful you know, time.
When my son lived in Helena, Montana, I flew the airlines out there and had them fly me to. I flew to Great Falls, and then I had an instructor come pick me up in 172. And take me down and give me a little mountain flying course. Okay, so I just got a message, a text message. These things are flying in, and someone that you recently met, and he wants us to talk about the social aspect of looking for an oil cap.
Well, I think I could. Friday afternoon, we had a great social event on how to find a dropped oil cap in a cowling.
And of course, do you have an idea who sent this message?
I sure do.
Would it be a gentleman from St. Louis?
It would.
Yeah, who was up visiting? My brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a pilot, but loves to be around the airport scene and. He and his son and wife and the grandson all come in, and I introduce him to Al, and Al and his student are looking for an oil cap that fell down into an engine nacelle of a Sky Aero plane. And so that's how he leaves the city, thinking about, oh, this is what pilots do.
Yeah, they lose things, critical things. But right. Hey, that's how we were just enhancing the social experience, that's all.
Yeah, he did it on purpose.
Knuckles. Yeah, right.
Right, I always say, hey, here comes someone that we want to fool. Go ahead and drop that oil cap.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know what? It's interesting. There's been a lot of tweets coming in, and it's actually kind of a lot of fun. You know what? There's been a lot of tweets saying, you know, hey, we need to meet halfway somewhere. Let's go up and come check out our flying club. I just got an email from that said Nantucket Island would love to have you visit and fly here.
Wow.
Yeah. That sounds good to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Seriously.
Sign me up.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's, you know, hopefully.
Well, you know, you think about
I'm getting
it.
Getting giddy again.
just last weekend, we had three of the four that we had, up at Janesville for breakfast. And how neat that would have been if we had gotten three other airplanes from four other clubs. We could have literally owned the restaurant for the day. And I think we definitely need to do that.
We need to have a.
Just not going to happen. We have to make it happen like everything else. So
absolutely.
Let's do that. I mean, that would just be great. Yeah. Could you imagine?
Calling all flying clubs, you know, bring back some oomph to the, you know, Janesville.
Yeah, we're going
to
descend
on this
spot.
It doesn't have to be Janesville. It could be Dubuque, Iowa.
The airport you just mentioned, that sounded lovely.
Yeah, let's all meet in Nantucket.
Yeah, right. That would be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not taking the Sky Aero, though.
Yeah, I would. There's something that's pleasurable. I like I say, if it weren't for the bladder stops or things like that,
exactly.
To go low or slow.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I guess I'm doing this aviation ADD again, getting off on a tangent, but did you read the book from Rinker Buck, The
Flight of Passage?
Yeah, absolutely.
Personal jinx.
Yeah. When I grew up, we just said, you owe me a Coke. But I read that, and I'm thinking about two teenagers, IFR, whatever, in a Piper Cub flying across. How exciting is that?
What a great read. Any pilot that hasn't read that really needs to go out and pick that up.
That is I did a seventh grade book report on that book.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was cool. You know what? Another tweet just came in a tweet came in through Twitter saying that all...
Don't all tweets come in through Twitter?
Yeah, you're right. but it's really neat. There's a Alton Bay. Have you heard of Alton Bay, New Hampshire?
I have not.
This is bringing us back into our discussion about ski planes. Well, Alton Bay, New Hampshire is the only state and federally licensed registered ice airport in the winter and seaplane base in the summer.
That's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
That's something I would never even.
That's
thought.
A fly out of flying club fly out adventure in itself.
Well, you know, in some of these, maybe depending on the distance and all, there's like maybe you take us halfway in the King Air.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely a hat tip to Derek for that one. That's an interesting tip.
That's cool, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh my god, this is really cool! I'm having fun with this.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a pretty good giddy feeling about, you know, how this the sense of community. This is the sense of community that we just touched on a half hour ago,
right?
And it's just so important. There's so many cool people, so many people doing amazing things out there in aviation that we need to share it with it. And there's outlets like Twitter and Facebook and email and text messages make it so easy to connect with people like that.
Exactly. And you know, you guys have heard me say probably 100 times that remember, community is nothing more than the two root words, common unity. And it's all around this aviation, and the passion we feel is shared by all these people tweeting us, all these people that listen, all the people that read magazines, whatever, pilot license or not, we all share it, and it's very, very powerful, and we need to leverage it.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got a picture of on Twitter of Nantucket Island.
I don't want to see it because I'll be there tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, this would be this is a lot of fun. I think this is another great launching play. Every time we end the show, you think of this. We end it with, "Hey, this is a great launching platform to move forward."
Yeah,
and I think it is.
And we're all these little moving forward starts are really translating to a lot of momentum in a lot of different directions, but all positive directions.
Right, absolutely. This is exactly, you know, the way to get what you want out of aviation, you know, and just these conversations that you can have on Twitter and you know, just learn. This is social learning. I mean, think about that. We had, you know, here we are rambling on about a couple questions, and then people are answering. And now, you know, we're transmitting some knowledge, and people are on Twitter are helping others learn. It's such a cool concept and thing.
It's not a cut and paste. It's a copy and paste. We retain it and yet move it on to somewhere else. So very, very cool. Now, we do have a couple things to decide before we close shop here, though.
Yeah.
Who's sitting back seat, by the way, on the way home? I probably should, since I was PIC on the way up. But,
absolutely.
I will enjoy that.
Todd and I get to flip a coin for who flies home.
Well, the good news is you're CFI, so you feel good in the right seat. He feels good in the left seat, so I think we've decided that.
Whoa! Oh, yeah. Don't go speaking too fast here. It would be nice to fly from the left. No, but
I think this is a great problem to have.
Yeah,
you
isn't
know, here we're three guys that are about to go fly in a beautiful moonlit night. Can't go wrong.
Be better there. So, we should talk a little bit about an upcoming show.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week, one of these concepts that we talked about tonight, open airplane. I don't know if you remember hearing that, but Rod Raddick is going to be coming in from Open Airplane to tell what cool things are going on, how he can help make flying schools, aviation, flight clubs more accessible to everybody all over the country.
Open Airplane, of course, trying to emulate what we see in rental cars to be able to go to another city and run an airplane without having to go through like a private pilot course, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a endeavor that I really just hope takes off. I mean, it can only improve what we've got out there. The fact that you can take your pilot license and use it in so many different places and deploy it at different airports, it's a great idea. I hope we can help him build steam with it.
I'm sure we can.
Absolutely, that's one of the things Adam said. that aviation needs things like this. The entrepreneurs and, you know, the people of Open Airplane and Rod himself are fit the bill for each one of those. So it's going to be really cool to hear what's going on with that. Definitely an amazing person and organization that are doing some cool things with aviation to make it better. And Todd and I have actually talked to him before, and, you know, he's a pretty passionate guy. Yeah. You know,
That's probably not too different from most of the people that we meet, right? Uh-huh. Everyone's passionate about this, and that's what's so cool about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, unfortunately, it's the worst time of the entire week, 10 p.m.
I got 9:59. We get to talk for another minute.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I've received a text from my wife questioning my comment about three guys, moonlit night, a perfect night.
That's going to be something you're going to have to address with your wife.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Maybe that came out a little bit wrong.
But we knew what you meant. I hope you didn't get it wrong.
No. All right.
So, again, our thanks to the folks here at the Hilton Garden Inn at Oshkosh at Whitman Field. And we will look forward to seeing everyone next week back at KPWK at Signature Flight Support. And again, if you're ever there on a Sunday night, we're live 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. Love to have you stop in. We've had a few people stop in from time to time, and always enjoy meeting new pilots and having it be part of our show.
You know what? That could be another fly-in, a flying club fly-in for something. You can, you know, we always have dinner at 5 p.m. before the show, and feel free to fly in, join us for dinner, and sit in on the show. It's a lot of fun. And there's usually free popcorn at Signature and coffee and all that, and it's a good time.
And Todd, thank you for translating from guest now to, or transitioning from guest to host. It was wonderful to work with you tonight, and I hope we can do it a lot of times.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. Great conversation tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we can call tonight a success and a win for aviation, the home team, and it's going to be fun. Next week is going to be just as great. So, unfortunately, 10,080 minutes have to elapse until you hear from us next, but I think they'll go by pretty quick.
I think they will as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you, everybody, and as always, we say to you, blue skies.
And tailwinds.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.